It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are at the halfway point tonight. The show, we're up to 11. Matt Bubala's in for Patty Vasquez. Her and Carm and Jackie and Shania, they did the boot camp in San Diego for the Marines. They did, I guess you can do that as civilians. You could do it as a thing. So they did it. They did it all week. I've been following. You should follow Patty on Instagram because you could see all the pictures of doing it. And it seems like it was a life-changing experience. I would assume it would be. But you can do that.
They did this of their own free will?
I think they did. Yeah, they
My suspicion was that they were being forced by, if you know, she's trying to get that TV show going.
Oh, that was
like they're trying to get her in shape for the show. That's,
no, that was not the case. It was a WGN radio thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're like David Hochberg put him up or did it. I guess the thing you can go do. So I'm excited to hear about it. I haven't seen Patty in a week.
Why would anyone do boot camp when they don't have to?
Doesn't
he have a great voice?
Yeah, he does.
He has a wonderful voice, doesn't he?
Well, the last time we talked to our buddy Chris Churchill,
hi.
He wrote a play about waiting in line to get into a play, and then he staged the play in line to see the play, and there was a play in the room.
Well, you know, there was supposed to, but then so we were waiting for a play that wasn't even happening.
Yeah, right.
Which, of course, you know, again, smacks of waiting for Godot. So we had Godot as a character in the play. So he showed up to ours. I don't know about anybody else's problem, but we had our Godot. Yeah.
Chris is I guess they'd call you a Renaissance man.
Why not? I'll take it.
He's a comedian. He's a musician. He's a playwright. He gives tours of Chicago. And now he's a published author. The Ballad of the Small Talker is Chris's audiobook, published by the indie label Mint 400. For the audiobook, Chris turned to longtime Chicago comedian Nate Herman. Herman wrote on Saturday Night Live from 1981 to 1985. He's taught all over Chicago. I mean, at I.O. He's a director at Second City. He was part of the quote-unquote next generation of Second City, which was the cast in 1969. Nate Herman, Chris Churchill, thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
So, Chris, what is this? Tell me about the book. I mean, I it's so funny because every time I see you, you're like,
Can I just say something? Ginny. Ginny?
He's waking up his wife, so she'll listen.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. I didn't even have to mention Kathy's name.
Yeah,
she's asleep already.
Yeah, sure. There you go. Chris, where's this book come from?
It comes from all the years working as a trolley driver and just a life of pretending to be happy for people. And I thought... You know, in my downtime, I was just kind of playing on my iPhone with the notes, and I found myself writing a character who was the most optimistic customer service agent in the world. And I realized that after a while, I had like chapters and chapters of this guy just talking about a ridiculous, nonsensical shopping center that he worked at. And it came off as this sort of like Candide meets Willy Wonka type of scenario. And it's really fun because you're supposed to act that optimistic, but I'm not in my heart that optimistic.
You're a very dark individual. I've known you for a long time. But that's what I always thought was a great juxtaposition about you, going back to the trolley. I mean, you're kind of one of the most recognizable trolley drivers in Chicago. I would see you, not a week would go by where I wouldn't see you on Michigan Avenue going past going, hey, Justin.
There's Chris.
He's got 100 tourists in the double-decker trolley.
Yeah,
But you know, what's interesting to me is that you have found a way to create characters and create comedy and create art in so many different platforms. I mean, Los Shut Up was the band that you had. You were a band. You were able to tell stories through the band.
Sure.
When you were in here before, you were talking about the play, right? You had a play. We did a play. Now this isn't just a book. This is an audio book.
Yeah. It's funny because like I would have maybe tried to get it published as a book, but our mutual friend Jamie Campbell, very positive force in the universe, as far as I'm concerned, he was already on Mint 400 Records. And he had had great success with his first comedy album that he did, and
that's what they do. They do more comedy records.
Who, Mint 400?
Yeah, they do music. Music's a big thing.
Yeah, but music is their main thing.
But what I'm saying is like what they've published has been mostly when you do spoken word, it's comedy albums like stand up.
So Jamie, had this great success. Like they put his album out and it went like number one on the Amazon comedy like the first week. And he was like, oh my gosh, it's happening for me. I'm going to move to LA. And so I immediately said to him, I was like, well, when do you want that screenplay? So that you know, when you're down there.
That's what
and
you do to friends who moved into L.A., right?
Right. And he goes, what screenplay is that? So I wrote him a screenplay. And now, so he loves it. It's about wrestling. He loves it. He wants to get it made down there in L.A. He's carrying it in his back pocket with him everywhere he goes.
Seed, this is the seed to the next time we talk to you, which will be in 3 months. Like, exactly. We already shot the movie. Here it is. Like, how did you do that? Nate Herman, I want to bring you into the conversation because, I mean, you're actually – I would say that you are a distinguished Chicago legend.
I am a Chicago legend.
How'd you get hooked up with this guy, this Joker? That's my first question.
Well, it was at the trolley. I was working for them for a while as the guy who was up on top.
That's called a tour guide.
The tour guide? Was that what it was called? Yeah.
And I was driving the bus.
And Chris was driving the bus, and I didn't think much of him. And as we got to know each other, we found out we had so much in common. And we just started hanging out and making each other laugh.
You actually helped me with a sketch show early on in our relationship.
Oh, that's right.
Chris Hauser and Scott McNulty, we did something. The co-governors of space for a short while.
Right.
He helped us with the show for a little
bit.
And
the sketches were as absurd as Chris's plays. Chris has a wonderful notion of writing for the theater, and that is you should have everyone in the audience leave by at least the intermission.
I know.
Hopefully. if not earlier.
I was there for early Chris Churchill. Chris and I met at Second City in the conservatory.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And so learning, as we were both learning the craft of how to be comedians, that was a big part of what Chris wanted to do. And it was always hard to be like, we want to piss the audience off? All right, Chris, let's do it.
Yeah, I didn't know I was weird back then. Mm. I hadn't accepted it yet.
I think we figured it out.
You guys knew.
A one-man campaign.
Schadenfreude definitely knew I was.
To bring back Dadaism for the theater.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Schadenfreude. Do people on the radio know about Schadenfreude?
They know that I talk about it enough that there was a sketch group, but it's old.
Wonderful, wonderful radio ensemble.
Yeah, thank you.
Nate loves you. Thank you, Nate.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, Nate, because when Chris approached you with this project, what was your initial thought about recording an audiobook?
I had never done it, and I was really excited about doing it. And we were both thinking, it's 300 pages. You know, we'll knock it out in a week. And 9 months later, when we finished it, because, you know, after about 45 minutes of talking, I'm like this. And
right. You got to take a break.
Can we take a break until next week?
So how did you actually go about recording this audiobook?
Well, okay, so first we didn't even think it was really going anywhere. We thought it was just something fun to do for he and I because we were just kind of hanging out having coffee. We had a coffee date once a week in Logan Square. We would just go and hang out and talk about plans and fun, just, you know, good friend stuff. And originally he had – and I guess he still has his Films for the Ear series that he does occasionally. He hasn't done one in a while. But
we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, yeah. But basically, he was doing like live versions of like stage readings of movies and stuff that were really fun stuff to watch and to listen to. And he was thinking about doing some more, you know, audio based stuff. And we had decided maybe we were going to get a website together. We're going to actually make this thing official. And the first thing we'll do is we'll record your audiobook, Chris. And I was like, that's great. I love it. Because when I was writing it, I was thinking of him when I was thinking about this optimistic character because. Even as dark as – he's kind of dark too, but he could put on a happy face for the crowd too, you know. I think maybe that's another place where we bond. We recorded the first six chapters of this without any particular goal in mind other than maybe putting it on a website for Films for the Year and making that something we do. But then that's when Jamie Campbell came in. He introduced me to the guy from the label and said, hey, they're looking for something like this. And the guy got back to me and said he wanted – the guy's name's Neil Sabatino, by the way. Yeah. Shout out to Neil, you know.
Okay, so the book is The Ballad of the Small Talker. It's an audiobook. Nate Herman is the star. Chris Churchill's the writer. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'd love to talk to you guys more about your relationship, but also, you know, just both of you have been a big part of the Chicago comedy scene. You guys have both been independent. I mean, Nate, you have a track
Chicago
record.
Chicago legend, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, that's what I, as you said. But I mean, to be on stage, to look at the stage pictures of you and your mustache next to Harold Ramis and Brian Doyle Murray, and like, I mean, and to write for Saturday Night Live.
The amazing thing was I borrowed that mustache for that photograph. It wasn't mine.
Of course you did. Nate Herman, Chris Churchill here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. My guests, Chris Churchill and Nate Herman in studio. We're talking about Chris's book, The Ballad of the Small Talker. You know, I'm interested in, you know, how much did you know of Nate's life, Chris, before you met him? I mean, you obviously met him tour.
Well, I knew nothing about Nate when we first met. I thought, oh, here's just another, you know, new tour guide that I got to work with, and he's probably going to be terrible, and I'm, you know.
He was right.
But it was funny that the day that he and I started working together, we had this tour of kids from, like, rural Missouri, and it turns out that they all knew a kid I babysat in Kansas City when he was two. And so I was the superstar for the day. And then at the end of the day, all of a sudden we start talking about, yeah, I know Eddie Murphy. You know, what? And you know, all this stuff. And all starts going down the list of things he did. I was like,
now, Nate, you did Second City, the cast in 1969, 1970. You directed shows. You wrote for Saturday Night Live it was 1981 to 1985. I mean, you know, you've had a comedy career. I mean, you've had a career that's bigger than most people that are working today. I mean, it really is. Talk about that. I mean,
really?
That's true. I mean, it is. To think about being a writer on SNL, there are kids right now who are living in Lincoln Park that are like, that's my dream.
And if they only knew.
What does that mean? What does that mean? And that's what we want to get at.
It's basically a factory job. I mean, a delightful factory job, but, you know, you're in there and then they lock the door and then you're allowed to come out Saturday night, or rather Sunday morning when the show's over, and go home for a day.
And then you go back. Yeah.
And then you go back in and you don't see your family for the next week.
Was it, I mean, how, to take us back to that time for you, I mean, what was it like? Was it just, I've heard so many people say it's a great job for a 23-year-old.
It is. I was older than that, though. I was, let's see, how old I was. I was maybe 30, 33, 30. Most of us, I think, were around that age. All the writers, amazingly enough, were pals. There was a great writing ensemble. In fact, over the 4 years that I wrote there, we had what I think was just the greatest writing staff ever, equal to your show of shows. And we had Chris Guest and Larry David and Andrew Breckman and a wonderful fellow named Andrew Smith, who'd written for TV forever, and the two guys who went on to write all of Eddie's movies, Blaustein and Sheffield, and Pam Norris, who went on to do Designing Women, and Ellen Fogel, who went on to do Married with Children, and Tim Kazurinsky was also writing while he was performing. And it was just an amazing writing ensemble.
Yeah, it sounds amazing, yeah.
Oh, for a while, yeah. We had Terry Southern.
And, you know, I had a crush on him instantly, like, when I was hearing this stuff, because, this, you know, that was my Saturday Night Live that I knew was... The post-apocalyptic Saturday Night Live, the one that happened after the original cast left, and the one bad cast was there for a year, and then Nate showed up and saved the day, right?
We did. Well, we had to. It was all thanks to, and I have to say that, because he doesn't get enough acclaim, Dick Ebersole was the guy who saved Saturday Night Live. The original guy. What was his name? The guy who does it now.
Nobody will remember. No one will remember.
Nobody remembers that name.
I never let that name cross my lips. Lorne Michaels left. He had left after 4 years. Goodbye. Thanks. That's it.
Yeah.
And NBC said, "Wait a minute. You've created a time slot. That time slot didn't exist as a national time slot. It's when all the local affiliates, you know, showed old movies. And we're making money now. We're not, you know, letting you go." He said, "I'm leaving. Goodbye." And they said, no. He said, "All right, I'll put this lady in." And he brought in a lady, and she did it for a year. And her claim to fame was that she had known, she had lunch once with Woody Allen. And right. So she did a show.
Poor Gene Demanian.
To her credit, that 1 year was the George Lazenby, you know, the guy who came in after Sean Connery. Nobody was going to accept
that
cast.
Right.
And they didn't. And then they were gone, and Dick Ebersole, who was sports executive for NBC, said, "Let me try. Give me 4 years. I can't do any worse." The show was going to be canceled. He came in, new cast, new writing staff, brought the show up to where it had larger ratings than the original 4 years ever had. He's the guy who made it the national institution.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, because, wow, man, that would be 30 years ago, mm-hmm. right? You left that show in 1985. I mean, when you think about it, you have a very, I mean, it's obviously modern history in the way that a lot of, there have been a lot of books and a lot of, you know, just history, archive about this.
Right, and none of them are right.
that's what I was going to ask about, living through it. I mean, are those memories that don't fade? I mean, is it something that you'll always remember?
The few memories that I have of being there don't fade. Yes, that's right. The ones that, the ones that I can remember. What was that Dick George Carlin line? Lived through the 60s and remembered it, you weren't there. Something. Yeah. Boy, did I mangle that. Yeah. If you remember the 60s, you weren't there. Was it.
But for you, I mean, to come back to Chicago, I mean, you live here in Chicago now. I mean, you've taught and directed, and we talked about working with Chris on other stuff. I mean, you've seen a whole couple generations of other comedians come through. You've seen successful names from the Tina Fey's and everyone who have gone on to Saturday Night Live and done the same career trajectory. Talk about you being an observer of that, watching Chicago's comedy scene change over
the years. It's gotten better and better and better and better and better. It's become a mecca, obviously. Now Second City is this comedy university. They, you know, every once in a while they remember that they've got a theater still there. And most of the emphasis is on the school now. And people, when I was teaching at I.O., people were coming in. People would drive in from another state once a week to take a class. People are coming in from all over. It's wonderful. It's great. It's turned Chicago into, I think it has a lot to do with why Chicago has become such a world class city.
Yeah. So many
this
people
has a lot
come
to do with
it.
It. Yeah, the three of us are in this room, by the way, you know. In fact, I know, you know, Justin from Second City and, yeah, you know, all that, you know, yeah, you from Second City. Honestly.
When I started at Second City, like we were saying back then, it was, you know, a mom-pop operation. And I got in the company. Our company got in because the next generation.
Yeah,
whatever
next
it was
generation.
Called.
That's what's called.
We got in because the company that was in before is Bernie Solins, who had owned the theater, had sent to New York, to do a nightclub there, and didn't bother telling them that he wasn't going to bring him back. Just left him stranded in New York. And he said, turns to us, and we were the touring company at the time, and we were the first touring company. There was no touring company before us. So he turns to us and he goes, you guys are the new company.
Oh, that's such a good Bernie Solins right awesome. There, Nate. That's great.
Everybody does Bernie.
Yeah, that's
and it's
good.
all the same. Yeah. You're the new company.
That's awesome. I mean, there's so much, and I want to have you back because we could talk about your career. I mean, the one thing that sticks out.
I would use the term Chicago legend.
Yes, I've used it. I can only use it a certain amount of time.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
no.
it's a money thing. But let me ask you, because, you know, one thing that I love about you and I love about Chris as well is that you've been able to forge life in comedy, meaning that, you know, you have other jobs and you do things to pay the bills, but you've consistently been attracted to and you've been performing in that art. Talk about that and the sort of philosophy.
Chris's turn.
Yeah. Chris, why don't we start with you and then we'll go to that. Just the idea.
The short answer for me, I haven't made a life in comedy. I'm doing the best. I can.
You don't stop. He doesn't know.
Is the thing. Just because you're making a living with your day job doesn't mean you're not making your life in comedy. It's true. I can't help it. And you know what I do for a living now? I mean, I do the trolleys occasionally, but I read stories to 3-, 4-, 5-year-old kids for a living, and I got them rolling. They love it. They're losing their breath. They can't handle how funny I am, these kids. And I'm just reading The Little Red Hen.
And you're making up for all the bad teachers that they have. God bless you. These kids are going to remember you all their lives.
I hope so.
They will.
God bless those kids.
Yeah. And you know what? Unsolicited hugs from a 3-year-old is better than a crowd's applause some days, you know?
Mm. What about you, Nate? Let me ask you the same question about life
in
the arts.
For me, I consider an unsolicited hug from a 3-year-old is better than... I forgot the rest of it.
I don't think it was a very good sentence.
No, it was. But for you, I mean, you've lived your life in comedy.
Yeah. It's
good life?
Yeah. I got into it because my uncle was a radio and then television and then film writer in Hollywood. Mm. And his name was also Nate Monister. Mm. His name is mentioned in
finally
one of,
something I've never heard.
In one Neil Simon play, one of the Brighton Beach plays, the character goes, I want to become a writer like Nate Monister.
How about that?
That was my Uncle Nate. And so, you know, when I was a kid, other kids were being, you know, 9 o'clock, you go to bed. At 9 o'clock, they'd wake me up. So Uncle Nate's show was on TV. Go watch TV.
That's
so
awesome.
He knew it, and I think he probably kind of knew that I was headed down that path, because when I got the job at Saturday Night Live, I called him up, and he said, well, I'm not going to say congratulations. All I'm going to say is welcome to the awful world of television comedy writing.
Awesome.
And he
was
right.
That's what you need in life, and because it's so much. There's so much praise or worship at the altar of Saturday Night Live and writing television. You never hear the angle of like, it's a factory job. It is. You go in for...
Nate talked me down off a ledge with that very line one point. I was kind of getting frustrated about not really having gotten where I had intended on going when I first moved to Chicago. And he says to me, listen, you got your wife, you got your birds, and you do your show... You're happy. That's what you need. You don't need any of that stuff. I've been there, and it's not worth it.
Chris Churchill, Nate Herman. Chris Churchill's book, The Ballad of the Small Talker, an audiobook that's published on the indie label Mint 400. It is voiced by Nate Herman, who is a longtime Chicago comedian.
I think you could use the term legend.
Probably could. I probably could, but, you know, it's a lot.
And I'm
that's
so
a lot
grateful
of legends.
That he read it.
He's a comedy guy, SNL guy, and he's here in studio with me tonight. All right, guys, thanks for being here.
Thank
and
you.
Good luck with the book.
Awesome. Thank you.